This is Fred Film Radio. I am Francesco Belais at the Turin Gay and Lesbian Film Festival with Michael Stabile. How are you, Michael?
I'm very well, sto bene.
Your last name sounds Italian, right?
Sì. Siciliano. My family came over to the United States in 1911 and settled in New York. And we're a mix of Siciliano, a little bit di Napoli.
South Italy. Okay, so Michael Stabile, the right pronunciation. Okay.
In the United States, they changed it to Stabile, but Stabile, perfetto.
Okay. You are here in Turin to present your documentary, Seed Money, the Chuck Holmes story, right?
Yes.
Chuck Holmes was the creator of Falcon, the famous porno production, the first one. Why did you decide to do a film about him and about porno?
Well, I thought that Chuck's story was in some ways the story of gay culture. When he started producing the films in the early 1970s, it was illegal. It was the cops would arrest you, things were sold almost like drugs. And over time, it became more acceptable. It became, he made a lot of money. And later, he turned toward the gay rights movement to try to take his fortune and give it back to the community. Unfortunately, when he tried to do that, it was very controversial. People didn't want to take his money, or they wanted to take his money, but they didn't want him around. And I thought that was a story about assimilation and some of the questions that come up with when we try to present ourselves to a more acceptable society. What do we lose? And I found him a very compelling character. He was often at odds with himself. You know, he wanted to fit in, but at the same time, he clearly had this ambition to be an outsider, to be a rebel. And I found that very, as a character, very compelling.
How did you get in touch with this, the character of Chuck Holmes?
I had a friend who was, well, I'll go back. My background is as a journalist. And I had a friend who, I'd written a lot about the porn industry, and about sex workers and about gay history. And I had a friend who was working at Falcon Studios. This was maybe in 2006, 2007. Chuck had been dead for about 6 years, and they had sold the studio a number of times. And at the time my friend was there, they were throwing all of this material out, just throwing it into dumpsters. You know, pictures of, I mean, Chuck with President Bill Clinton or Mikhail Gorbachev or, you know, all of these sort of things. And he thought, this is an amazing history. This is somebody who was one of the first gay filmmakers in many ways, you know, who was one of the people who gave gay men in particular a vision of gay life that was positive, that was not, you know, murderers or people killing themselves or something. And in some ways reaching gay people who were in the closet all over the country, because if you live in New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles, you might be able to see a few movies with a gay character that was positive. But if you live in the middle of the country, the only images that you're getting are these 8mm films that you're buying under the counter in the store, that you're secretly watching when the family is away. You know, and I thought that was an important history for us to take down. Many people who had been involved in that early business were dying. Chuck had been dead many years. Other people were dying quickly, and I thought, this is an important gay history, and so let's start figuring out what we can do with it. My background was not as a filmmaker. It was as a journalist, but it seemed, in particular with this film, that it would benefit to tell it visually.
Okay, of course it's a film, the film is also a portrait of the gay community in the 70s and in the 80s, the evolution of habits, fashion, and last but not least, the appearance of HIV virus and AIDS. So please, well, tell something about this.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that fascinated me about looking at these films was, in some ways, they were documents of the gay community as it progressed. So he was taking street scenes and taking styles and the way people wore their clothes and stuff and filming this and putting it out in movies. In some ways, it was, he was a documentarian in some ways. And I think that when HIV hit, the porn industry, and Chuck in particular, reacted like many gay men did, which was with confusion and with a real struggle. We had a culture that was all about liberation, that was centered around sexuality and rejoicing in sexuality. And suddenly, here was somebody, you know, here was something coming and saying, you have to stop, this is, it's wrong, and it was almost presented as a moral argument. Chuck in particular was very forceful. He did not want to put condoms on models. And this was another thing that I found very fascinating about him. Here was someone who had HIV. He had HIV in probably 84, 85, you know, early on. And at the same time, as he is struggling with his own mortality, he's making films and saying, you know, we can't do this. The business will die. And I think in a lot of ways also thought, you know, the revolution will die. I think that there was, it was a struggle. So having someone who was HIV positive and was still doing this, I found a very interesting complex. And I thought it was also something that I think the gay culture went through as well.
I think that condom or not condom, this is the problem. It's, nowadays it's a problem as well with the bareback films. And
sure. Well, now, I mean, I think there are different things. I think that right now we have different medications. I think that right now we're at a very interesting moment. And these same debates are going on in California right now. There is, and California is still the center of the porn industry in the United States, particularly on the gay and straight, there's legislation that would mandate condoms for all performers, that it would be illegal to shoot a film without a condom. And so we're still going through this struggle. I think that we're at a unique time because there are medications like PrEP and Truvada, which stop transmission of HIV. Mm-hmm. There are antiretroviral medications that stop people from HIV from transmitting it. And I think that, you know, when in the 80s, it was a voluntary thing. Everyone sort of came together and figured it out. Now there's sort of those same struggles, and I think that gay men in general, I mean myself included, we make decisions in ways that are maybe not necessarily the official decisions. You know, we make a decision per partner, if we're in a relationship, or if we know the people. Sometimes those decisions are not accurate. But I think it's important to respect the fact that we all live our lives in ways that, you know, are comfortable, and then sometimes it's sort of like smoking. Some people smoke and some people, we are aware of the dangers, but we make choices in our lives. And I think that central to gay liberation was that we need to be in control of our sexuality, that we have to, that it's a personal decision.
Back to Holmes, can you please tell us something more about the second part of his life and his big contribution to the gay community?
Yeah, so I think that Chuck was always someone who, he was very superstitious. He, you know, really knew that he had made all of this money, but felt that it would not stick around if he didn't give it back. He contributed in the beginning very strongly to Democratic candidates, liberal candidates in the United States, because he was afraid of going to jail. You know, many of his colleagues had gone to prison for producing pornography. So he got involved in that, and then people brought him in. He was somebody who was very sociable. He had a lot of money. He could get people to do things that other people couldn't. So he slowly got involved in the gay rights movement that was happening in the late 80s and early 90s, raising money. You know, like I said, he knew people like Calvin Klein. He knew people like David Geffen. He could raise money very quickly, and that he quickly became an asset. And so he became, in some ways, a leading figure in organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, which is a gay lobby in the United States, and with politicians, you know, with Bill Clinton, with Al Gore, with all of these people who at the time maybe didn't know what he did. They just knew that he was a wealthy man and had a lot of money and could do it. And I think that that appealed to Chuck. I think that when you're an outsider for so long, sometimes it's very appealing to be accepted, you know, in these circles. And I think that that's something that is, whether you're gay or straight, often you look at these titans of industry, you know, these Rockefellers or the Kennedys or something, who maybe start with money that is controversial, and then slowly, often through generations, become high society. So I thought that was an interesting aspect of Chuck's story. He really did have that need to fit in and to become, you know, an important player. And I think that at the end, he wanted to leave all of his money to go back into gay causes, with the idea that I made my money from the gay community and that money should go back. He didn't have any children, you know. I mean, he was a gay man in the 90s. So the idea that it should be a charity, you know, and that Falcon for some time would be run as a charity, you know, that would deliver the money back, was really central to what he wanted to leave behind in his legacy.
Okay, thanks to Michael Stabile from Touring Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, Francesco Belais for Fred Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.